Hello and welcome to this episode. Today we're closing season one of the New Work Playbook. Let us picture two very different bosses. Think of the first as a genuine leader, how he moves through the world and handles his responsibility. Consider this the kind of leader you would want to follow or aim to be yourself. Now picture the second one. He's just as genuine. What you see is what you get. But it's the kind of manager that people refer to as a bad boss, the kind they try to escape from. Just picture the two for a moment. I call this episode Authenticity Theater because that's exactly what we mostly get to watch on the stage that I deliberately call management and not leadership. But before I explain, let me take you to the theater. We're in the audience, waiting for our two imagined bosses to enter the stage. The authentic leader you consider worth following stands at the right wing. The other one, let's kindly call him the authentic jerk, is waiting at the left wing. Before they enter the stage, let me play you a script that each of them received. The genuine leader got the following.
Before you go on stage, just a few notes. You care about your people. That's nice. But honestly, you care a little too much. And confidence matters. Even when you're not sure of something, don't let them see it. Say it with certainty. Hesitation in your position reads as weakness. Don't spend too much time on your team. Spend more with the people who matter. Build the right network. That's how you make a career. Keep the focus on results. Results are what gets measured, not how your people felt while they produced them. And one more thing, don't tell them too much. The more they know, the more there is to be used against you.
And now the script for the authentic jerk.
Before you go on stage, a few notes. You come across quite cold, sometimes even aggressive. Warm it up a little bit. Let them see you as empathetic. Show them a little vulnerability. Just a little. It makes people trust you. Use your charisma. Just dazzle the room. Talk about people and values. Say that you care. Give them someone they can relate to a bit more. You don't have to mean it. Just sell it.
Now tell me, what's the kind of performance that you're expecting to see? I think most of us have experienced something similar. The authentic jerk gets polished until he passes for a manager the organization can defend and use. And the authentic leader? He's shaped into a version which a company allows when a strong leadership culture isn't deliberately built. We picture two very different but authentic managers. Only one of them is a true leader. Both got handed scripts by their environment that put masks on their faces. And under the bright spotlight from the distance of the audience, they might almost look the same. Almost. In the less constrained moments, the mask comes off again, and the people closest to them get a glimpse of the real person. In moments of stress when the stakes are high and the jerk's polish slips, when the performed empathy and care are gone and the values they praised become thin air, and when pressure eases on the conforming leader, when they hold more power to shape the organization, they can show again that they're in this role to lead people well. So most of what we're seeing can be called constrained authenticity or performance. And the question that follows is, how did we end up with such performances when authentic leadership as a concept has been around for over 60 years, when it has roots in ancient Greek philosophy? For years I asked myself this question, and I discovered quite a confusion of various ideas and developments. With this episode, I want to give you just a little bit of the story behind it. You will get a different perspective on authentic leadership as something we build in relation with others, and not something we find by searching inside ourselves. But don't worry, this is not a history lesson on authenticity. This is about real authentic leadership. And I will not take you much further back in time than necessary. Let me start by showing you when the idea of authenticity in leadership took a wrong turn. The important moment lies in the wake of corporate scandals like Enron in the early 2000s. It was a crisis of trust. Some of the largest companies in the world were brought down by leaders who lied, who enforced cultures that put performance above everything and everyone. Managers who built fraudulent systems, who enriched themselves while the people who trusted them lost their jobs, savings, and pensions. And the questions that got asked absolutely mattered. How do we put integrity, ethics, and morality back into leadership? How do we make sure the people at the top are who they say they are? Out of that moment, authentic leadership became one of the biggest ideas in modern leadership development. The field set out to put integrity back into leadership. What they wanted was genuine leaders. And they turned to humanistic and positive psychology, which in its focus is the study of the individual self, the self-actualized person. This gave them authenticity as a description for a genuine person. But at that time, authenticity already carried the influence of a highly individualized Western culture, a culture that has spent decades teaching us that authenticity means looking inward. And that focus has done something to the world. It merged authenticity with individuality more and more, as if being authentic simply meant being as much ourselves as possible. Just sit with the following question for a moment. How do we develop our genuine self? When we look at this inward focus, it reads as if our true self is something innate, something hidden in our inner world that we need to discover. It feels as if it's independent of the world around us and can only be uncovered by focusing on what's inside. But that's not what builds authenticity, not even for us as individuals. We don't become ourselves in isolation. Humans develop through social connection. Who we are is shaped in relation to and with other people, through those who raised and taught us, the ones we looked up to or avoided, and the people who cared about us or didn't. We got also shaped by the culture we grew up in, with its beliefs, values, language, and the rituals that are all part of it. So even personal authenticity is built in connection with the outside world. That's why the inward, individualistic reading of authenticity is a distortion, and I consider it problematic in many areas. But leadership is where I see this focus creating the biggest problems. Because leadership is a responsibility where the relationship with others isn't optional. Think of someone you know whose reference point is mostly themselves. Keep in mind, I'm not talking about introverts and extroverts here. Self-referential authenticity has nothing to do with whether someone is introverted or not. Some of the most charismatic, outgoing people have themselves as their only real reference point. What I'm describing is the direction in which someone's attention points. And the person I'm asking you to picture points it mostly at themselves. As a way of being, there's nothing wrong with that. For a private person, it's mostly not a problem. If anything, it looks like freedom. Someone totally free from what others expect and truly themselves. This is what the whole Find and Bring Your True Self movement has been aiming for. But what happens when we give such a person a team, people they're responsible for? This makes an important difference. A person can live with themselves as their main focus and be fully authentic. A leader cannot. Leadership is not a way of being ourselves. It's a responsibility towards people. It only exists in the connection with the people you lead. What surprised me the most is what researchers eventually measured. The authentic leadership questionnaire comes in two forms. One where the leader rates themselves, and one where others rate the leader. So the field that asked leaders to turn inward and discover their authenticity ended up measuring it through both the leader's view of themselves and what others saw. And when those pictures don't match, we're back in the theater. Other academic fields definitely looked at leadership through the lens of the people led. Research on what people expect from a leader, how they actually experience and judge them, goes back to the 1980s. But somehow, the modern authentic leadership movement stayed focused on self-awareness and inner discovery. And what leaders got primarily trained on was that side. Find your true self, discover your true north, bring your full self to work. This focus went into books, shaped keynotes, leadership development, and coaching. Now don't get me wrong, self-awareness clearly matters. A leader has to know who they are, but knowing ourselves is the starting point. Great leaders are not just in tune with themselves, they're equally well attuned to others, in particular to the ones they lead. So authentic leadership needs others. It needs observers, the people who experience a manager as a genuine leader, which clearly isn't a boss who's just an authentic jerk. You see, both of them exist, the authentic leader and the authentic jerk. What the modern inward-focused development overlooked, when it comes to leadership, being in tune with the outer world matters just as much, if not even more. And maybe the next part explains why this relational part was left aside. Because the incomplete concept of authentic leadership is just one part of what produced the authenticity theater. What we're seeing on stage got mostly shaped by what companies reward and allow for. We all know that there are many organizations with great leadership, great cultures, and remarkable performance. But let's be honest, there are just as many that haven't been built by great leadership and cultures. And in 2026, it doesn't look like the trust crisis got solved. Employee engagement surveys are rather pointing in the opposite direction. You may remember that I mentioned the Gartner survey from last year showing that only 48% of employees trusted the senior leaders of their company. Considering that trust in leaders is the proxy most often used to measure authentic leadership, I'd say we haven't come very far in the last 20 years, despite the authenticity hype and billions invested into leadership development. And that has less to do with the concept of authentic leadership and more with the companies themselves. It's clearly not that we don't know by now what great leadership looks like. Leadership and organizational research alongside practitioner voices has produced substantial knowledge. And we have plenty of proof that putting it into practice serves both employees and companies. But remember our authentic leader and the script he was handed before walking onto the stage. The stage is the workplace we enter. You can be a really good leader, but if you step into a company that was shaped by very different managers and you don't happen to be the new CEO, you will be handed a script. And independent of where you stand with your own true self, your values, your leadership capabilities, there is a pull towards conformity. Just like you don't develop in isolation, you also don't lead in isolation. And you and your team are part of the company and its culture. Of course, you can resist that pull to conform, depending on how much power you hold and how easy it is for you to accept friction. There are many great leaders who manage to reshape entire organizations, even with jerks, as bosses. But they were working from solid ground. They had the power, track records of successes. They trained others to be leaders. And they were experienced in navigating a highly ambiguous leadership culture and organization. Many leaders struggle with this. They feel the pull of the environment, the political games, the pressure to fit in and perform, the reliance on others. How can you be a genuine leader when true leadership is not being asked of you? And how do you navigate an environment that lets polished or even authentic jerks thrive because they still bring results? You see, most organizations aren't built on clear leadership principles and values. Company cultures evolve through the principles, values, and behavior that the top models allows and rewards. And for anyone joining, this means do the work within our constraints, within our norms and culture, and produce the results we require the way we want. Conformity with these constraints is not an individual flaw. It's an organizational failure. And the bad bosses we're talking about are not just rare exceptions in a sea of great leaders. This is something that has been studied across industries and countries for decades. A meaningful share of bosses are the polished and authentic jerks. and they influence how other managers below them act. Toxic cultures emerge from such bosses. Robert Sutton, organizational psychologist and professor at Stanford, has spent decades researching what such bosses do to the people working under them. He described what these leaders actually cost an organization. And his bottom line is that even top performers are more trouble than they're worth when the cost is fully counted. So why do these people survive? Unfortunately, many companies never look at these costs. They see the obvious results, but the damage is not measured or gets overlooked on purpose. Throughout the first season, I've given several more references that underline the cost of bad leadership. A company culture is shaped by the bosses at the top. If that culture is not built on what great leadership looks like, it's very unlikely to produce more genuine leaders. So the question is, how can we be good leaders under these influences? I would say the first thing is to accept that these constraints are workplace reality. If we were living in an era of great leadership everywhere, this podcast wouldn't exist. The jerks are out there. They're everywhere. Second, I would argue that good leadership needs continuous practice and learning. So any leadership concept that promises you are done once you finish the program is lying. The reality of our ever-changing world already tells you that there is no finish line for learning, especially not in leadership, and certainly not with AI entering the stage two. And the third point that I want to make specifically with this episode is that leadership is and always will be a responsibility towards other people. If the motivation to take a manager position doesn't come with the acceptance of that responsibility, such managers will have a hard time becoming a good leader. Authentic leadership is also not a state that we reach. It shows through what we practice consistently in tune with ourselves and the world around us. And this is where I would like to come back to the previous episodes of this season. If you've tuned in regularly, you know that each topic is carried by a main and a reflection episode. The last 6 weeks cover topics that are foundational to good leadership. Taken together, these leadership practices help you develop authentic leadership. Each practice also holds against the forces I mentioned today. Let's take a short walk through the season together. In the episode, We Are Losing Respect, we looked at the difference between selective and grounded respect. Grounded respect is a true value. Selective respect is performance. The difference is that the first is independent of whether you know the person in front of you or whether they can do anything for you. Great leaders don't use respect as a social strategy, and employees are watching this. They see how we treat others and whether it's genuine or performance. With grounded respect, we resist the pull of granting it only to those we deem worthy. And this connects directly to the next episode, the power paradox, because power and status are key influences that let us lose respect for others if it isn't a value we live by. But the power paradox itself has one of the biggest effects on leaders. The paradox is that people tend to rise through the kind of qualities we want a leader to hold. But power's corrupting nature leads to selfishness, less ethical behavior, exploitation of status, and other careless actions. And a significant portion of managers reach for positions of power not with the intention to lead, but with the primary motivation to use it for their own advancement. So motivation and the corrupting nature of power both have a negative pull on good leaders. And handling power with care and awareness is what closes the door to these influences. With the following episode, The Confidence Trap, I introduced Adam Grant's pairing of confidence and humility. Most people consider them opposites when they actually live in balance in a true leader. Confidence is the trust in our capabilities. Humility is knowing we are human, that we have blind spots, and that we don't know what we don't know. Practicing confident humility resists the pull to become overconfident and performs certainty as a shield against our own fallibility. It keeps a leader connected to reality and open to learning, which links to the following episode about curiosity. In the end of Why, we looked at the importance of curiosity for continuous learning, development, and innovation, and the ability to really see other people. Curiosity not only helps us to avoid becoming blind to our own weaknesses, it also lets us see the capabilities and strengths of others, which is essential to leading them well. The willingness to learn keeps us in tune with the world. It holds against the pull of performing certainty and confidence. And this also impacts whether people trust us. In Trust, the Broken Spine, I address that we haven't moved out of the trust crisis. We explored self-trust as the foundation of confidence and others putting trust in us. Self-trust is based on self-awareness. It's what we get when we act in line with our inner compass. And others trusting us is the reflection of it in our relationship with them, which is why we can look at trust as a proxy when we want to evaluate authenticity in a leader. So walk the talk is the trust-earning practice that holds against the forces that can make us look like a performer instead of an authentic leader. It also keeps us from bending or abandoning our values and commitments under pressure. And as mentioned at the end of the episode, trust and care go hand in hand. With the following episode, Daring to Care, I explain the difference between empathy and care. Empathy only gives us an understanding of what another person is going through. Care is what moves us to act on it. A leader who doesn't genuinely care will eventually reach for performance, performed warmth, and talks about people and values. Some may even go further and use empathy as a manipulative tool. Great leaders care about people. They know that it cannot be performed, and they resist the pull to care less, especially when it costs them something. They are the ones who fight for the balance of power, for the connection of results with humanity. Conformity and performance for the sake of their own positioning is not how they act. Those leaders care enough to take a stand for authentic leadership. They are the ones who make a difference and reshape organizations from within. And yes, individual leaders practicing all of this inside an organization that pulls the other way are swimming against the current. Which is why these practices are also what an organization has to build into its leadership culture. It's what makes all its values and culture statements true. So I really hope that I was able to show you that genuine, authentic leadership is not what you achieve by focusing on self-awareness, but by practicing what leadership is. A responsibility towards people, a complex and challenging role with all kinds of forces pulling you in different directions. It's certainly not an easy job, but it can be highly rewarding when you see the results of great leadership. What I've given you with the first season is a starting point. Like I said, it's a journey of continuous learning and practice. No one gets there the same way, within the same time, or with the same challenges. And even those who are called great leaders know that their successes are the achievement of the great people they happen to lead. They know that there are no great leaders without great people to follow them. And that brings us to the end of Season 1. I will return on the 2nd of June with the starting topic of Season 2, psychological safety. If you don't want to miss it, hit the subscribe button. Connect with me and share your thoughts, questions, and challenges. And if you enjoy my work, please leave a review. Meanwhile, stay curious, stay tuned. Thanks for tuning into the New Work Playbook, where work gets better because people matter.